Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. The West Australian beer scene is really vibrant right now. There are about 80-odd breweries in the state and some of the most passionate beer lovers going around call Western Australia home. WA is a long way from Tasmania. Maybe that's why it has captivated my imagination so much. I live my WA beer dreams vicariously through those characters I meet at the Southwest Craft Beer Bogans and the Perth Beer Snobs. Thanks to them, I know the names and have tried some of the beers from those 80-odd breweries. One such brewery that I've fallen in love with from afar is Bright Tank Brewing in East Perth. And so I reached out to co-founder Matt Moore to get him on the show and tell his story. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Bright Tank's Doctor of Fermentology, Matt Moore.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Going very well. Thanks very much for joining me tonight. We both of us almost forgot we had this in our calendar, so I'm glad we could come together to record.
The wonders of modern internet, eh?
Absolutely. I've got so many questions for you because I know bugger all about you, but from what I've seen, you are running a pretty cool setup there, but it is a long way from your work, your previous work in civil construction. Do you want to describe to me how that epiphany moment went for you when you decided to turn your back on that career and start to chase your brewing dream?
Yeah, so I suppose myself and my wife have always been like pretty keen on locally produced sort of alcohol and food and produce from the local areas. And we spend a lot of our leisure time touring wine regions and going to different breweries. And we went to France where we got married and drank lots of wine and drank beer in Belgium and all those good places as well. So and we were sitting down in Margaret River at Bootleg Brewery when I joked and said we should start a brewery, and she said, "Well, why don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, why not?" That's literally how it started. So then we progressed into it.
You are now the envy of every single home brewer, wannabe brewer out there listening to this right now.
Well, I think, yeah, if there is a tip you could give to anyone, is if you want to do something, just do it, man.
Just have a crack.
Phil Knight had it right the whole time. Just do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just do it. So is Gemma an actual beer lover, or she was just very supportive of your love of beer?
Oh, she loves beer.
Oh, great.
Like any typical lady, she can't drink too much of it because they always finds it bloats them, but that's fine because that's more for me.
Okay, so you've been having this romantic luncheon at a brewery. How long after that did you start to sort of, you know, really get serious about your plans?
So I think around that time, I was building the Pioneer offloading facility at Chevron's acclaimed Barrow Island, and we said, right, let's hook into it. And at the time, I was working for a lab company, so doing all the concrete testing and analyzing. So I've always sort of had a bit of a analytic nature. And sort of went, well, if I'm going to do it, I'll do it properly. So I applied with Pete Aldred there at Fed Uni and went and did my grad cert and grad diploma so I could really get my head around it. It was really, really good help because it helped us design and build the brewery in the process of learning all that as well. So that was from the start of that to the finish was also about the inception of how long it just took us, which was 3.5 years to get our head around what we wanted. When we started our business plan, we were going to contract brew out of ECU and start up a little small tap house. And then by the end of the business plan, I was like, seriously, we should just open up a freaking brewery, man, and do what needs to be done.
I love it. Were you a home brewer originally?
Yeah, obviously from a young age. Yeah, I think a lot of guys have the same story, especially in brewing. Yeah, like I brewed like at 17 just to have cheap booze. But that was all the tin kits. And then when I revisited it, obviously and went back to uni, I just immersed myself in, one, the uni side of it, and two, I went and bought a Braumeister and immersed myself.
What beers were inspiring you as you learned your trade?
Well, I think everyone, when you start delving deep into that craft beer to begin with, you can't help but get attracted to those big American brands that sort of pave the way. But yeah, before I knew about them, like my dad came from England and we were ale drinkers, so nice. The whole house was ale drinking house pretty much, you know. So I grew up on Guinness and Speckled Hen and Tetley's.
Oh, Speckled Hen. Yeah.
All Young's. And then, you know, Dad started buying, I suppose the first craft beer we really attached ourselves to was Malt Shovel, was James Squire's Strong Ale. And then,
oh yes,
yeah, then obviously Little Creatures after came pretty close with that as well.
Back on the whole brew thing, how long did it take you to find that venue? Because I've heard it's pretty special.
Yeah, so it took a year of snooping around, and it's not off the beaten track. It's definitely somewhere in, it's east of the centre of the city, in a district, old warehouse district, that borders onto Claysbrook, which is actually quite a popular area, but it's probably been known for a bit more of an older demographic up until now, and that's sort of changing quite rapidly, a lot of that due to the stadium. Obviously, yeah, a lot of those people, you know, that wasn't what they signed up for, so a lot of those people seem to be leaving. Yeah. And yeah, in turn, a brewery for some people, unfortunately, wasn't what they signed up for. But it's sort of made room for a little bit more of, I suppose, a bohemian culture that's sort of starting to surface up there as well, which is really, really cool. But, yeah, it's one of those things, like, to find a warehouse, people are like, why'd you go there? I'm like, have you tried trying to fit a 10-hec brewery with 10 tanks and water and reverse osmosis and room for 130 customers in your average building?
So, not going to happen.
Yeah, and we're small. Like, you know, like there's obviously, like, you look at us and then you look at Little Creatures, which is just massive. But, yeah, it is a very special place, and it was quite serendipitous. I grew up on graffiti. Love it in right down to the core, that urban culture of graffiti and everything that it stands for. And that area was a mecca for Perth graffiti in the 90s.
Right, so okay.
Kind of how.
Were you a tagger yourself? Did you bring out the cans at all?
Definitely got on the murals with the boys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What was your graffiti nickname?
I used to write up Reveal, which is pretty cool, but hasn't dawned the pavement for a long, long time.
So as you were dreaming of this ultimate beer venue, were you also dreaming of an ultimate beer lineup that would associate with it?
Yeah, for sure. I suppose it started, you know, like I wanted to make nice, clean IPAs. Obviously, West Coast was pretty fairly in trend at the time. I definitely then came the NEPA. It fucking changed everything. Yeah. but at the same time, like, guys were pre-NEPA, like guys from Stone and that were already sort of brewing with English ale yeasts over American ones for more fruity esters and things like that. And I sort of had that same belief. I was like, hey, why can't we get a NEPA and a West Coast IPA and just make an IPA out of those two, plus obviously produce either of the style. But surely you can have one that sits in the middle, which yep, seems to be termed a hazy these days. Some way or form. So I do have a sort of a love for English ale yeast, but I suppose every brewer's secret passion is they want to be a winemaker. So
Is that true? Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, we all want to put beers in barrels now. So So you know,
that's something, like, I was missing.
I have a pretty good relationship with the whiskey distillery behind us, and we trade some things off for barrel space. In a safe zone. So we've got about 30 barrels going at the moment, with different Brett age sours. We're in a collaboration project with Rocky Ridge that we're releasing, I think, in the next 2 weeks. And every time I do an interview
I say we're releasing this beer, and it's ready and it's bottled. But like between myself and Hamish, we couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. but we are releasing it very soon. I've just been on the phone to Ricky from Rocky Ridge as well just the other day, and we're finalising twos and threes of it.
I've just finished a 16 pack which I ordered from them during the coronavirus thing, and They brew some great beers.
Oh, man, I love the guys to bits. Hamish is one of my best mates. I also look up to him because I was following his lead to a degree, and he was amazingly helpful. I brew with the same ethos as him. Obviously, we're not on a farm. I can't be that guy, but I definitely adhere to the way those guys do business, and I totally look up to them.
Nice. Hope you're enjoying the episode. First up, this one's for the Facebook followers. Thanks so much for being part of this whole beer healer ride. I bloody love all the conversations that we have and the way that we can all share this craft beer gospel together. It is absolutely awesome. Now, if you're also one of the people that listens via Facebook as opposed to using Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I'm just wondering whether you might be able to help me a little bit more with spreading this craft beer gospel. All you got to do is like the post as you're listening to it. And then if you really want to go that step further, maybe share it with your mates as well. That would be awesome. But even better, join up to Apple Podcasts, like, subscribe, rate, review, all that shit. It'll just be awesome. I'd love your help. Thanks very much. So anyway, Bright Tank, as I understand it, because obviously I'm a long way away from you and it's been a while since I've been to WA, so I'm going to have to take what I researched this week. So it's equal part awesome brewery and awesome eatery from what I understand. So what? How did that come about? Because like it's one thing to start, you know, a brewery and, you know, have your usual pizzas, burgers, you know, food trucks or whatever, but it's a whole other thing to be able to, you know, have the kitchen and the facilities to like have, let's call it a gastro pub type of setup where you're really pumping out quality food. Did you feel like you were just taking on a little bit too much?
When we started it, no, I was pig-headed, not idealistic. Now would I do it again? Yeah, only because I'd have to want to do it better than what I'd done it. But I think it is a tough nut to tackle. Mostly because chefs are a special breed. They're great people, but they live a highly strung life, and it is quite often that your business and your chef will find themselves on the opposite side of the street. So you do struggle a little bit with that, but again, it's not their fault and it's not the business's fault. It's just hospo in general is it creates high expectations of everybody, and it can burn people out quite quick. The better your food and the better your offerings and the more you try and squeeze that, it does have it's tough, very tough. And Perth is a tough market. There's more pubs than there is people. we basically want to be Melbourne, but we don't have the population, nor do we have the people that go out. It's one of those things. But we all still, you know, the people in the industry, whether they're brewing or food, or share the same passion. That's why Perth has a great food scene. So
when you create a new beer these days, is there a full-on session with the chef just to make sure that he can create something to complement it?
Nah, the chef sort of builds food around the beer, and then there's certain beers you create that, you know, may have certain hops or a yeast character that you know is going to impart something sort of different, but at the same time, you're sort of building a menu knowing that like these sort of foods are going to suit malt forward beers. These sort of foods will suit yeast forward beers, and these sort of foods will sort of go with hop forward beers. So, if you stick it in those parameters, beer is one of those amazing things that it's got such a good broad palate most of the time that you can slot food in a lot easier than you can with wine. So. Yeah,
yep.
When we do what we call beer gestations, which we pre-COVID were about to fire up another one and begin holding them quite regularly again, we do at that point sit down and go, right, well, either the beer gestation is going to be with another brewery and we'll base it around a collab, and then what's that beer about? Well, that's going to be much like your core dish or your root dish, like much different to a root note on a guitar chord, you know what I mean? Like that's what it's going to be focused around, and then you build the rest around that and you improvise around that. So you go, right, well, this is that. He's got these beers. We can make that with that and these ones.
So you're talking about there's a lot of pubs and stuff in and around WA. Did you take a pub from somewhere within WA and you know, take inspiration from that to create what you've come up with, or was it something from overseas in your travels that you've seen? How did you come around up with the concept?
We drew our inspiration a little bit more from Melbourne.
Okay, yep.
Love Melbourne, love the food scene, love the pub scene. Yeah. Love most of your Perth breweries, from what I feel, a lot of them draw inspiration, like down south and that. They're big venues, you know. They scream, like, you know, money basically. Like, we wanted that more urban feel that you see in Melbourne. We wanted it to be more intimate. A lot of breweries, you know, we are family friendly, but we're not the big brewery with the play yard either. We wanted to service the other side of the market.
Or the water slide, like, I forget who had Beer Farm.
Beer Farm, yeah, Beer Farm. Water slide. that is a seriously good place to go party if you ever get a chance. Those guys are wild.
Yeah. Okay, so it was more about Victoria. Had you lived in Victoria as well during your travels?
No, but I do have a cousin that lives there, and obviously going to uni there as well. I went back and forth and spent, you know, we nearly moved to Melbourne, and then it just didn't work. Couldn't justify. In fact, we wanted to start a brewery in Tasmania. That's where it all started. We were going to start one in Tassie, and then out of nowhere, in a year, like five popped up in the Hobart region. I was like, "Oh, there goes that."
Yeah. No. Fair enough. Oh, damn. Yeah. We would have welcomed you with open arms down here. That's for sure.
I love Tasmania, yep, man.
And I know a guy who could have looked after your marketing for you. Damn it! Duh. I just want to get back into the beer industry one day.
That's all right. Awesome.
So what about the WA beer scene over there when you jumped in? Did people welcome you with open arms, or was it like, oh, shit, here comes another brewery?
No, the brewers and brewers all welcome you with open arms. They're pretty lucky in that. Look, like sometimes business to business, sometimes there's always going to be something like that, but that's just business as well. But on a brewery level, brewers are great people. They look after each other. They do the right thing by each other. If I needed something from Nowhere Man, they'd lend it to me. If I needed to lend something to Blaster, we all look after each other. So it's pretty good.
So do you feel like mentoring is really important for new breweries these days?
Oh, yeah. Mainly you're not – there's two ways to do it. There's two ways to run business. You have first place advantage or last place advantage. There's no such thing as middle place advantage.
So
we're no longer first place advantage. So if you're at the back end of a growing boom, which we are, you need some guidance there, and then you need to work out what they haven't done, if they're willing to be that open with you and better that. So a mentor is a huge thing. Well, I actually look for more mentors in the restaurant scene and the brewery scene, and that was mainly because I was surrounded I was surrounded by so many good brewers. And that wasn't a part of the business where we struggled as much as it was more just needed money. The thing about brewing is 90% of the time money can fix most of the problems, because money pays for reps, money pays for marketing. And brewing is all marketing. I don't care what any craft brewery tells you. CUB can sell you five products and make you think they're all different and they all came from the wort stream. That's marketing.
Absolutely.
And craft beer.
Well, you've just let out the big secrets from all the big breweries now. One wort stream, many beers.
Which is actually incredible technology to see it in action, to be fair.
Yeah, well, having worked for Lion, I totally get it. When we used to bring out new beers and people would be saying, oh, that came from the Han Super Dry wort stream or the Summer Bright Lager wort stream, and that they're all pretty damn similar. But, all had different labels, different trademarks on them, and sold to completely different markets, even though they may have almost tasted pretty much the same.
Exactly. And with craft brewing, you're not obviously playing that big mass marketing game. You're playing guerrilla marketing game. where you know you're producing products, you're trying to produce them consistently, but again, this comes down to money. If you don't have the money to secure the hop contracts and the hops change, or one little thing goes wrong, but you don't have the money to hold that batch and blend it back with another batch like they do, your marketing actually diverts into what I'd call guerrilla marketing or frontline marketing, where I think like you get in front of a problem and you get to your audience and you explain the problem and you humanize the problem, and then people buy your beer because you're human, which is the difference.
Speaking of marketing and such, you touched on the graffiti a little bit ago. That branding I think is pretty cool, actually. Anybody takes one look at the Bright Tech logo and you know there's graffiti inspiration in it. Who designed that for you? Was that something you did yourself or someone over that way?
No, actually, Dan Wen from 90 Degrees Graffiti in Melbourne, massive shout out, great dude. Dan and his wife Eleni own a graffiti mural company, and he in a past life done a lot of graphic design. Now I think he likes to keep it pretty boutique. He designed our logo and we love it. And then we also use Art by Destroy in Perth, who puts it into practice with a lot of other things as well, which is really cool. So very, very much. Nice. Either way, both of them aren't known graphic design firms. They're graffiti artists.
Yeah, okay. Who did the mural on the wall of the brewery?
Art by Destroy.
Yeah,
do you know who the mural is?
I've only seen one photo of it. I didn't pick it up. Tell me.
Most people think it's Kruger from Archer, which is kind of cool, but it's not. it's Louis Pasteur.
Oh, yeah, I did read that, actually. Yeah, I did read that. Mm. Yeah. This research I'm doing, it goes in one ear and out the other.
I know.
I read about so many breweries that they all start to sort of meld together a little bit. So now that whole graffiti concept, as I said, I love it. And some of your beers have taken that concept on. Like I love Chalkface Killer. I'm a huge hip-hop fan from the 90s, so I get that reference. Dank Tank looked awesome. But then there's been a change I noticed when I was sort of going back through your Facebook feed and stalking you, where you've got the East Perth Lager and the new Double IPA sharing this similar-looking base design with the aqua blue and yellow, and then some line-drawn illustrations of what I assume must be landmarks around the area instead of those coloured cartoons. What's going on? Is this a new era for Bright Tank?
Yeah, so, look, Chalkface right now is being tweaked. Chalkface will remain Chalkface Killer because it has become its own.
You're a Bright Tank fan.
Well, no, that and it's become its own entity. If bottle shops said,
So a bit like a sub-brand almost.
Yeah, it has, yeah. So it is going to get tweaked so that it looks more sort of Bright Tank focused. So the biggest problem we're having, and it wasn't a detriment to the art on our cans, was amazing. And it was it most undoubtedly an expression of me and what goes on in my head. And then my wife's ability to translate that to an artist. But it wasn't focusing on the brand of Bright Tank, this new direction focuses on that. So we're playing around with a few things, but the first one, East Perth Lager, that you'll see the picture on that kicking around a fair bit in with the rest of the cans as well, because that's the East Perth Power Station underneath. It kind of looks like an old Castlemaine brewery. It's kind of it's kind of like Bright Tank meets 4X / VB / Swan Draft.
Nice.
And it was like a compromise in the middle where I kind of liked the retro-ness of it, but it still was bright and our colours and still showed our graffiti logo. But and it still shoots out in a fridge. So yeah, it is definitely.
Yeah, I was going to say you're trying to go for that trademark sort of blocking kind of idea, aren't you? Where you line them up all together and they look like they belong.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. And so like, I found I don't know, you would obviously know Guy Southern, good beer.
Yep.
Yeah. So me and Guy had done a lot of speaking over the time, and we found that the fridges were getting quite loud. And toning it down a little wouldn't hurt for the brand. So.
Yeah. Yep. No. Fair, yeah. I sometimes find that where there was that real sort of period, you know, 3 or so years ago, where you know a lot of the illustrations on the cans were, you know, big and bold, and you know that was really a thing. But then all of a sudden, it feels like there's been a bit of a wave of change and people start to cotton on. It might be, you know, due to the success of somebody like a Bolter who's got that very distinct family brand. You know, you put them all together, you know, they all belong. And as Sterling says, it wipes out the fridge when you see them all side by side and realize that there's also power in that. Not only is there power in individuality for some, maybe your limited release cans, but for the family of brands, the trademark, the core range, whatever you want to call it, there is power in belonging together. I always use the old Voltron type.
You really are a Wu-Tang fan. we like Voltron.
yeah. But, you know, it works. And you see them in a fridge, and if you've got four beers side by side, it's just like this block of colour that looks like it belongs together, and it's really powerful. It feels like it's an evolution for breweries these days to realise that there's power in that.
I totally agree. And it is, look, it's branding 101. The sad, yep. The sad part about it, in my like deep inner self, is that like I didn't want craft beer to become branding 101. But the reality is, branding 101 is branding 101 is because people always tick the same way.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I remember years ago when we first did it when I was working on with James Squire, and we changed the family trademark to come up with the new names they've currently got, and it was all about, you know, we've got to make them look like they belong, because you've got volume beers at one end and you've got the little ones that kick along at the other end, and everybody helps everybody kind of thing when they look like they belong.
Oh, 100%,
As you say, you know, mate, it is about money, and you've got – this is a business that you're running, and you've got to keep it running. So
exactly.
You can help you sell beers, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think the trick is to try and find that balance between having the family trademark brand but also giving the beers their own little bit of individual type personality, which I think is what you're doing with those illustrations of the Perth landmarks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also an ode to people who actually didn't know where we came from. They're like, in Perth, a lot of people bought our beer from bottle shelves. They're like, oh, I thought you were from Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
how interesting is that?
Yeah.
How did you stumble upon that?
Just through our reps and people at beer shows. They're like, oh, you're in Perth.
Maybe you were too good.
Yeah.
Too good at imitating the Victorian scene.
Yeah, but we're the scene. Victorians imitated us.
I love that.
We started it all, man. We're just really slow at marketing ourselves. That's the problem with West Australians, you know. We are late to the party
back
every time.
Yeah. I love it. Mm. So what about the actual beers themselves? Are they is the range copying a bit of a change? Are you throwing in a few more experimentals? What's going on there?
We're definitely playing a lot more with Brett.
okay.
And there's the minute I can can it, I will, because I love it. There's some hygiene issues, obviously, we have to work through there. But you'll see a lot of Brett beers coming out in keg from us. You know, Chalkface will be Chalkface. And I think the important thing about a good NIPA these days is that it is a good NIPA at a good price, and it's consistently just good. Yep. And fresh. So there won't be too many changes to where we have it at the moment. I like it now. So the last release, we sort of did a little, piss take and made Chalkface not hazy to socially distance itself from itself as a bit of a joke. Chalkface is since back quite hazy. And that's how it'll stay with a big.
Be honest,
fresh.
You fucked it up, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's okay.
The haze went, and we had no idea what we did with it. So I got on camera and made an absolute dick of myself, but it worked.
Hey, if it works, you can't take yourself too seriously, can you?
The beer was amazing. So
that's all that counts. That's all that matters.
It just wasn't hazy.
Shit happens. So next month, Bright Tank celebrates 2 years since it's opened its doors. Has that time flown by for you?
No, it's been hard. It's been long.
it's been hard, grueling.
Yep. I'd say to anyone that opens a business that doesn't have massive backing financially, like we didn't have the likes and some of the money. Like we started with balloons of debt. and I was just determined, pig-headed, and just chose to do it that way. If you're going to do business that way, the statistics for business that they give you are true, and you have to work, and you have to work really hard, basically. So those 2 years will be like hell. But when you get out the other side, and we're nearly out the other side now, even with Corona, like we're in a massively good position for our brewery. So we not only survived all of that stuff, but during that time we doubled our wholesale output, which unfortunately in brewing doesn't mean like instant cash or more money, but it's a huge thing for your brand. And we're obviously going through a position now where we've been forced to expand quicker than we would have thought, and we're working through that now, always, and we can deal with that. So
do you think, looking back, it was the right decision to go with the brew pub model?
Well, that's a tough question. Yeah, I think so. I think it took us a year to work out how to run a restaurant. It probably set us back a bit. but, yeah, now we seem to have tweaked that. Yeah, 100%. I think, well, we were never just a brew pub. Like, I'd always lined that brewery up with the envisionment that it could produce more than a brew pub.
Yep.
Which it was set up to do so, but I didn't think I'd need to produce as much as I had to produce this quick. Especially given the current environment. But as soon as you really start pushing for a take-home package, the volume just shifts up naturally because you've got to cover more space and more area, and the profit margins are so much lower, so you have to produce so much more as well.
What about the actual site itself? Are you still able to grow into it even after 2 years, or is it going to have a bit of a time where you're going to have to look for a new site because you're going to outgrow it?
We can technically probably fit 440-hect tanks in and bugger off the 420-hect tanks that are in there. That's probably about the growing pains I'd deal with before we moved out. I would say within 2 years there will be the Bright Tank restaurant you see there now, the brew pub, and a production brewery somewhere close in the
somewhere
city.
Else.
Yeah.
That seems to be fairly common, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%, yeah. So within the next 2 years, that's the case. And if it does go down that way, which I'm sure it will, we'll probably remove a lot of the stainless from Bright Tank, the restaurant, and replace it with fooders and brew a heap of, like, Flanders-style beers and stuff. Hopefully the world's ready for it.
That sounds pretty cool.
Again, that's a real pig-headed decision. It might not be the best business decision.
I've literally just met you tonight. You feel like the kind of guy that's brain maybe never ever stops going. Is that right?
Yeah, no, never stops.
Never stops.
No.
Yes. I mean, we were even talking earlier about where you were tonight, because you said you'd just come home from work, wherever it was, but you were away. I was like, how do you get away from the brewery? And you're like, well, I've got many full-time jobs.
Yeah, I do. So, yeah, I sub-consult to Roy Hill. I'm building a crusher and conveyor, which is totally not a brewery at all.
No.
But it's another source of income that allows me to grow my business. So
yeah. Is that one of those sort of things you were talking about in your first 2 years? Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to, you know, keep the lights on and keep moving if you don't have those large financial backers?
Yeah, you just got to hustle, man. 100%.
The hustle.
Yeah. Oh,
the hustle.
There's a beauty in that if you're willing to play the game, for sure. It's good fun. The pressure and the stress kind of molds into something weird, like, you know, trying to get your last run in a century or something.
Yep.
It's definitely got that feel about it.
So how do you relax when you're not on the hustle?
Play guitar.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you're doing nice.
How do I relax when I'm not on the hustle? I trade currencies.
Fuck, are you serious?
Yeah. It's very therapeutic.
I was waiting for you to say, like, I like to binge watch RuPaul's Drag Race or something like that on Netflix or something, but.
Every now and then I watch 20 minutes, 30 minutes TV.
Wow. I reckon you would get on great with my wife because she has a similar brain that doesn't turn off either.
Yeah, it struggles.
She struggles over night time when we're currently doing a house renovation for a bit of a flip, and between 3 and 5 a.m. she's awake thinking of all the tradesmen we've got to line up and all that sort of stuff. So,
oh, yeah, it's full on. My wife was, before we started the business, was quite, had no trouble sleeping. Now she's kind of similar. I've evolved her into a...
You've ruined her.
Yeah, pretty much. she hates it and I love it. She doesn't hate the business. She loves doing it, but those nights where you can't get to sleep or, yeah, I just so used to it.
Yeah, so what does she actually do around the brewery? What's her role in it all?
She's pretty much the operations manager, man. So she's the
venue. Boss.
Yeah, she's the big OG. I just sit up top and pull the strings. that's exactly where I like it. She deals with the venue, pretty much all of that, and how that integrates with the brewery. And then I obviously have a fairly close relationship with our head brewer, Tim.
Yep.
And between us, we nut everything out, brewery and distribution with our distributor.
Yeah, cool. And so you've got the distillery at the back. Could maybe making whiskey be something you see coming down the line in the future for you?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Yeah.
But I'd want to do it on my own terms.
Okay.
In your state with a pot still.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all your fine barley.
Yeah, it is good. It is really good.
On that though, Whippersnapper make amazing whiskey.
Yeah, cool.
Absolutely
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, nice. So, mate, we've been through this whole interview really trying to avoid mentioning bloody COVID-19, and we've done pretty well, I suppose. But, look, it feels like you guys are starting to get back on track, and us, except for maybe Victoria at the moment. What about you? Are you feeling optimistic about how things are going to go for you, like moving forward on the other side of it?
100% optimistic.
That's awesome, yeah.
Going okay. We, being our size, pivoted quite quick.
Yep.
I suppose the big thing, I don't know if a lot of guys tell you, but for people out there that work for small businesses, I'd ask them to be patient.
Yeah.
Like people sometimes seem to think that we have all the answers or that we have money just reaming out of our back pocket somewhere.
Certainly not the case most of the time.
And, you know.
Yeah. It's so bloody hard.
It takes a while to get on board and you have to make hard decisions and you have to let people go or you have to drop people's hours and these things just have to happen to keep the business alive. So
got to do what you got to do.
That's been one of the tougher things is dealing with that as a business owner and being an incredibly empathetic person as well and having to, you know, tell the employees, well, this is the hours you're working. I can't give you anymore. I can't do this or I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's been the most emotional, probably stressful part of it. We definitely drifted close to the wire.
Okay.
But luckily enough, I suppose I had someone come on board recently that sort of helped the business out that he's taken a small equity share and has put us in an okay spot.
Yep.
Not a massive sum of money by any stretch of the means, but enough that it's got rid of an overhanging debt that would have been very hard to deal with post COVID.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Definitely an interesting time.
Well, mate, it's great that you've sort of been able to find a way to make it through because it's been pretty challenging times.
Well, 100%. My motto is if you don't stop moving, you're not dead. So, you know, like a business only fails when you stop. So,
yep.
And that's not something I'm interested in. So.
No, it doesn't sound like
100%.
It.
But, yeah, it did. It did hit everyone hard. It hit us hard. But we were lucky enough to move quick.
Cool, cool.
And we did some things that kept us alive through that period. So
mate, you're not going to give up. Yeah. You're going to continue swinging for the fences, so to speak, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Two more years and we'll be hopefully a 30-hec brewery.
Oh, really?
Producing over 500,000 a year somewhere.
Shit.
That's the plan.
Shit. So that means you might be able to send some beers down to Tassie, eh?
Soon. Sooner than you think.
Ah, beautiful.
Well, to Melbourne and then, you know, it's
close enough.
A hop, skip and a jump.
Yeah.
Some stuff's going to Grain and Grape very soon, actually.
Lucky for them.
I'll be one of the first guys to get his hand on it. But, yeah, I'm actually looking for people to distribute my product over there. So
interesting.
Shout out to anyone that's interesting.
Might know a couple.
My email's going to get flooded by reps now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine there'll be distributors wanting to do that because the WA scene right now is just so hot and everybody seems to want a piece of it because there's some brilliant beers coming out.
Oh, yeah. Look, I know this probably will spark up world brewing wars, but I genuinely believe that, like, West Australian beers are probably far on the forefront of where brewing's gone.
Then okay.
I found going back to Melbourne in the last couple of times recently, yeah. Like, apart from a few trailblazers, like, everyone's still stuck on a NEPA.
Okay.
Where I don't know if it's because of our hotter weather, we've pushed the envelope a little bit more with sours and those sort of things. And,
yeah, look from the outside looking in, the WA scene just seems like it's a really great one to be part of right now. So many awesome breweries, some great beer regions. You've got the different Facebook groups are all supporting it, and it's really interesting. It's really vibrant, and, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff going on.
Oh, it's an amazing scene. It's really, really good. So we're pretty lucky. Queensland's the big one to watch out for, mate. They're huge.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yeah. They've got the right climate to be able to attract bloody beer drinkers.
Yeah, exactly. Great weather, great culture, and just, again, like WA, the space of land and the opportunities that affords people is bigger than, like, Melbourne's a tough one to get into, you know.
Yeah, so friggin' expensive and pretty bloody competitive right now too. Look, mate, I've got to confess, I hate to do this to you, but I'd love to stay here and keep chatting with you. We've probably gone slightly over time, what I expected. So much more that we could be talking about here, but I just got a text message from my missus who said, time's up. She wants to watch an episode of Billions with me before we go to bed tonight. So I'm going to have to pull the pin on you, mate. I'm sorry about that.
No worries, bro.
Oh, geez. Oh, God. I promised I would do it before I started this tonight. I shouldn't have said it because I would have loved to have chatted with you for a lot longer. But, mate, this has been thoroughly enjoyable. I love your attitude towards everything you're doing and your work ethic. And I haven't tasted any of your beers just yet, but I will at some stage because I believe they're going really well. And, mate, just thanks so much for joining me on the mic tonight. It's been absolutely fantastic talking to you and hearing some more about the WA beer scene, which I am really enamored with. I think it's just some great stuff going on over there, and mate, you're just another great example of a brilliant brewery doing some great stuff. So thank you very much for your time tonight, mate. I really appreciate
it. Cool, man. Done deal. It's great to speak to you too.
Good on you, mate. Cheers. Catch up.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.